I think where people fall down is when they do start laxing on their standards. You're not just doing yourself a disservice, you're doing the whole reptile community a disservice. Because then you say you sell someone a baby in like a 3 foot da 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 da. That person then starts chatting bear on the internet, and then, oh no, baby dragons are fine in 3 foot. And then we go back to the whole thing again, and it's like a disease, like it just spirals out of control.
It just goes in a big circle.
100%. And I think people need to realize that. I think hobbyists need to stop gatekeeping stuff. People want to do right by their animals now.
Yes.
Like I've seen a wave of, like I spoke about earlier, I've seen a wave of people that want to do right. They want to care for these animals as best as they can.
Welcome back to the Animals at Home podcast. My name is Dylan Perrin, and thank you so much for tuning in today. Today, I'm speaking with Ash and Jake from the YouTube channel Exotics of the World TV. You may remember Ash from a few years back. I want to say 2021. We had him on to discuss his store, Exotics of the World, as well as his teaching at college and whatnot, and it was another fascinating conversation. But today, we really delved into the concept of running a store ethically. I think this is going to be a great episode for anyone who's in the business of sales, so any even small batch breeders or larger breeders or anyone working in a pet shop. How do you ensure that you're developing a good customer base and selling animals to good homes with high welfare standards without hurting and shooting yourself in the foot as far as sales, you know, not scaring customers off with huge bills, or how to navigate, you know, the fact that reptile keeping is expensive and also have a store that flourishes. So that was a really important part of the conversation. Jake is more of a novice keeper, so he brought in a lot of great information for, you know, what it's like approaching herpetoculture from a relatively new standpoint, and that was really interesting to hear. And we wrap up the conversation with their new YouTube channel, again, Exotics of the World TV, what they are going to planning on doing with that channel and how they're going to give us an insight into the shop as well as, you know, the care guides that they're developing and whatnot. And they have a really interesting comedic spin to their YouTube channel, which is very evident just throughout this conversation, because this was a very fun conversation and there's lots of jokes throughout it, and it was a really good time for me as the host and a lot of laughs as a listener. I'm sure you'll definitely enjoy this. So let's jump into the episode. Awesome. Well, Ash and Jake, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
I think I should have looked before we started this. So what number are last? Ash, do you remember the episode you were on? The number? Probably not.
Oh, crikey. It was what? About 2 years ago, I think it was. It was quite relatively early on, wasn't it?
It was quite early on. Yeah. So I think it was definitely during lockdown. I remember.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Because I was teaching at the time. So.
Yeah. You were, yeah. So 2021 probably.
Yeah.
So it was a while ago. So people want a full background of your story, they can go back to that episode. I'll link that in the notes as well. But and this is Jake, your first time on the show, so thank you for being here as well. Why don't we just quickly start with a little background of you both? So maybe Ash, you can just give us a quick background. Your reptile keeping history. We don't have to go into super detail, and then what you're up to now.
So quick overview. I'm Ash. I've been keeping reptiles for. It'll be 21 years next year in March, which makes me feel relatively old. But I would say professionally keeping reptiles probably for the last like 15 years. And when I say professionally, like to like a decent standard,
yeah.
Like what I would class as like a decent standard. So I've done a bit of teaching, voluntary work up and down. I've helped in private collections throughout the UK. I've done stuff.
You've done quite a bit of stuff.
I've done quite a bit of stuff. So yeah, and now, well, not now, but 8 years ago, as of October, just gone, in 2023, I've opened the shop, and it's been open for three years. Been open for 8 years. So yeah, and it's going very, very well.
And I forget, did you open the shop or did you buy it from somebody or?
No, I opened it.
Okay, yeah, it was from scratch. That's right. And I know the full story of that is kind of in the first episode as well. But yeah, that was that was a venture on your own.
Yeah, venture on my own.
And what about you, Jake?
Well, for me, it's a lot quicker. I have kept reptiles for a few years, not professionally, like Ash has over here. Yeah, that's about it. No, so I've had royal pythons and bearded dragons. Just for a few years now, you give me the bearded dragon about 2 years ago now.
Yeah, I gave you Kaido about 2 years.
Rehome.
Yeah.
But in a way, that is kind of it. Like, I'm not. I don't own this shop. I don't own a shop. I'm just excited about kind of learning more about reptiles, really.
Yeah, which is cool. Yeah. I mean, it gives you guys an interesting dynamic of kind of almost like two different, you know, points of view and two different perspectives.
Yeah.
So how did your two paths cross then?
Well, I date your friend.
You do date my friend.
I date your friend. met someone and she was friends with you lot.
Was it on Tinder?
It was on Tinder, yeah.
Is a Tinder fella?
I am a Tinder fella. Well, I was a Tinder fella.
Okay.
We met, and then I met you and everyone else and it just kind of slowly became
a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a love story ever since.
It is. Yeah, it's nice. It's been lovely.
So, were you already keeping some reptiles before that?
Yeah. At the time, I only had a corn snake, I believe. Mm. I had a corn snake and I had not long bought a royal python from you. Mm. And then I met you.
Yeah.
Later on, after about less than a year after buying that royal python.
Yeah. And then you were like, oh, it's that guy.
Oh, he's that guy. Yeah, I know him.
It's my snake salesman.
Yeah. It's that fella of it yonder.
Yeah. It's that kid.
So then, Jake, you don't work at the shop, right?
No, I don't work at the shop, no.
Okay.
So
it just,
there's a lot of stuff that I don't overly know. So then when you use like the binomial names and stuff like that, it goes straight over my head a lot of the time because I've got no idea. I just kind of pretend that I do know what I'm listening to.
Just smile and wave, boys.
Smile and wave.
Yeah.
Google it later.
And obviously you're spending a lot of time in the shop now that you guys are doing the YouTube channel together. And we'll talk about that in a little bit because that's obviously, you know, that plays to that dynamic of Ash having a little more knowledge, you kind of getting into it, but also, you know, it helps newbies.
Oh yeah.
Just definitely. By, you know, the way you ask questions and the way you're investigating the hobby, I think it's really helpful.
Yeah.
So I'd love to spend some time on the shop itself because as I've said before, those are, you know, privately owned small reptile shops are really the lifeblood of herpetoculture because this is where you're going to have that experience with somebody in the store who's also a reptile keeper. Big box stores have their place for certain things. You know, they might expose somebody to the hobby for the first time, but you're not going to be exposed by a herpetoculturalist in a PetSmart. You know, you might be, but the chances of it are quite small. So, Ash, why don't you just give us a rundown of maybe you could quickly remind us of how you actually started the business and got into this, or maybe why you even chose to choose such a difficult thing to do, and then kind of give us a rundown of what the shop looks like.
Okay, so, oh, crikey. So it was, it was back in 2014, I worked at another reptile shop, and it wasn't the best in terms of welfare. Through no fault of the person that owned it, to be quite fair, they just didn't, they lacked quite a lot of that knowledge moving forward. So, I mean, even by 2014, 2013 standards, it was still quite poor. And there was a lot of things that I had to kind of like fight for. So, for example, supplying animals with UVB. A very bizarre concept nowadays, but for things like, which back then people were like, whatever it is, what it is, but also things that we 100% knew needed it. So things like bearded dragons and stuff like that. We also sold quite a few problem species, or what I would typically class as problem species. So things like green iguanas, so iguana, reticulated pythons, Burmese pythons, like boa constrictors, like as in the common boa, like out the wazoo. And I just didn't really like it. And it got to a point where the owner had only been running it for about a year and a half and was kind of like, well, I'm done now. I don't want to do this anymore. So they offered me it to buy the shop, but they wanted a ridiculous sum of money to do so. And I was like, absolutely not. So at college and university, I also did like a little bit of business as well. So I had like a basic understanding of like how things run and work and stuff. And what she was saying was completely bogus. So I was like, right, okay then. So I said, absolutely not. Would you accept an offer that I'd be comfortable with? She wasn't happy with that because she thought it was too low. So I went out on a night out to drown my sorrows. And then one of my very, very good friends, EBM.
Yes, EBM.
And as I was in a drunken stupor outside of the pub, sat on the floor, she was, and we're going into proper detail here now, aren't we? So she was like, well, why don't you open up your own shop? And then it was kind of like a light bulb moment. And then I got the ball rolling from there. And then in 2015, in October, I opened it. Obviously, subsequently left. I left there to do this. And then, yeah. And then I opened it and away we go. So that's how it happened.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's one of those ideas that when you come up with, you have probably have this overwhelming excitement and this is going to be awesome. And then as soon as you start actually working out the details, you're like, oh my God, this is a terrible idea. How am I going to do this? Where's the plate? Like, how do you source materials? Yeah. You know, where are we going to actually locate it? How is that transition, like having to go through all the weeds there?
So that was, I mean, with working at the previous shop and whatnot, I got quite familiar and quite buddy-buddy with a lot of the suppliers and stuff. So they already kind of knew of me anyway. So that part was relatively easy, but as in like getting the suppliers and stuff like that. The thing that was difficult was trying to go through the whole legal rigmarole, et cetera, that kind of thing. So we applied back then when it was called a PSL, which is a pet shop license. It's now called AAL. When it was a PSL, we applied for it, we had everything all locked down. Obviously we went above and beyond so we can catch up with like legislation, but I'll probably maybe talk about that later. But the first time we applied for it, we got refused the pet shop license. And the reason why we got refused the pet shop license was because we didn't have a biffer bin. So we got, which is like a general waste like bin, so someone to come and collect and stuff. So we had everything else all in place. We had the paperwork to say that the bin was arriving on, or the trash can was arriving on the Wednesday. Our pet shop license inspection was on the Tuesday. And because the bin wasn't in situ, she denied it. So we then had to fork out another, I think it was 125 quid, I think. We had to fork out another 125 quid for them to just go, oh yeah, you've been there now. Thank you very much.
Typical.
Classic government.
Yeah. But I mean, other than that, like our local authority is pretty decent, to be quite fair. Like they literally just come in and be like, yes, okay, everything is as normal. We show them the stuff that they need to see, and yeah.
Yes. This looks like a shop.
Yeah, this is like a shop. Animals don't look like they're dying. Everything looks in pretty good condition.
Gold star.
Yeah, there we go. So, and that's it. But yeah, it's more the licensing and stuff like that was the more difficult situation, to be fair.
Yeah, I'm sure. I want to get more into the kind of the nuances of the store itself, but I'm curious for Jake's point of view, because you were actually a customer of the store as well.
Yeah.
Before you really knew Ash, right? You were saying with the ball python. So this store, Ash's store, just your local store? Or did you do research to find a store that you liked? Or I'm curious to know what your experience was as a customer coming in there.
Yeah. So, right. So it wasn't my local. So when at the very start, I would Google where to get frozen mice for my corn snake, at the time when I only had a corn snake. And it was just wherever's closest. Just, it wasn't on my mind at the time, which isn't a great aspect to look at, like looking back. But, and then after going to what seemed like random places, like you'd go in and like there'd be birds everywhere and stuff, and just like, bit of a shithole, really. Like it wasn't great shops. They were basically like pet shops, just any sort of animal was there, had lived there and died there, and it was all on the floor, and it wasn't great. So then I did a bit more research and found a shop. I won't name the name. Found a different shop, which is down the road from you. I think you know which one I'm probably talking about.
Easy now.
Yeah, I won't say the name. And they were a bit better, but still kind of just a bit more polished. So still a pet shop selling all kinds of different things, not specifically just reptiles. Not, it wasn't like its own niche or anything. So you could tell that, like, yeah, the welfare wasn't great. It wasn't great, to cut a long story short. And I ended up also, unfortunately, buying a ball python. Well, yeah, ball python from there. Unbeknownst to me,
you can say royal if you
want. Yeah, royal python. Thank you. I ended up buying a royal python from there. I can't remember the actual morph of
a spider.
It had the spider gene in it. It had the spider gene in it. And at the time, because I was very new to all, I had no idea that different morphs of snakes had the possibility of genetic issues. It was never knowledge that was given to me. They didn't tell me when I bought it from them. So then when I got home with the animal and it started corkscrewing and like twisting, I thought I had done it. I was the one that's somehow injured the snake and caused some issues. So I never returned it. I never knew that it was something that I shouldn't have bought in the first place. And then I did more research and then found Ash. That's basically what happened, like, to cut a long story short. And it was just more of an annoyance that I didn't find him first, because it's an actual reptile shop. Like, it's actually what you were supposed to go to. And to me, there isn't really much point of the other ones being here. For me, as a customer, there will be no reason for me to go to a different one. Now that I've...
What was it? Because I'm curious. Just imagine somebody's listening to this who maybe owns a store or wants to own a store, and they're trying to replicate the experience that you had coming into Exotics of the World. Was there some things that stood out that you were like, okay, this is going to be my local shop from now on?
I think on the forefront, it's the knowledge. I think that's quite a big... Because if I try to give an example of the other pet shops, because they are just pet shops.
Generalists.
If you go in and ask like a specific question about a royal python or a bearded dragon, they're probably not really going to know. They're probably going to probably tell you to Google it. Like they're probably going to have some generalist knowledge that isn't really that specialized, and you're not really going to get an answer. Whereas here, there is always an answer. If you don't know it, Sarah might know it, or Heidi might know it. At least one person in this store will have the answer.
So it's like a competence in the information. Yeah. It reminds me, a couple of weeks ago, I went to Best Buy. I don't know if you guys have Best Buy in UK. It's like an electronics store. And I was buying an Apple Watch for my grandmother. And there's two models, and they're both different. One's a little more expensive, one's less. And the sales associate comes over, can I help you figure out what you're looking for? And I said, can you explain to me what the difference between these two are? And then he just looks over at the description tags of each model and just reads the bullet points off.
Yeah.
I'm like, thanks for that.
Yeah. You can do that.
It wasn't an issue with reading I had. I'm just curious, why is this one twice as much? What actually makes a difference? And so that's the kind of experience that you can have going into a place where the staff isn't actually knowledgeable about the products they're selling.
Oh, yeah, 100%. It's like being able to come here and... I mean, I the amount of time I spend here now when I'm in the back and not like a customer will come in and ask questions of like...
And you're running the back and hide.
Yeah, and I'm running the back and hide so they don't see me. And it's just general questions of like, say it's a royal python and they're asking like, what size mice should I feed it, or rat should I feed it? And then you answer the question and it's, how often should I feed it? And then you answer the question and it's what if they don't have it? Then you answer, or what they could have instead. And it's, as you said, having that confidence and just the knowledge of just knowing what to say and what the answer is and how to answer these questions.
And it can't just be the manager. It's got to be the staff, the sales associates.
And that's the fact. It's the fact that everyone who works here has the answers.
So how do you accomplish that, Ash?
Accomplish
you've
what?
You've got a whip in the back, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. And like poking sticks and also.
Yeah.
No, the thing is, like, I think when you embark on doing this kind of thing for a living and having it as a business and stuff, you've got to find a happy medium, like, with your staff. I mean, I'm not going to lie, I am extremely lucky with the staff that I've got at the moment. So, I've got Heidi, who I used to teach at the college I used to work at. She's here now and she's like learning. She's basically doing like maintenance and stuff and learning that way. And then we've got Sarah, who I used to work with as well. I mean, she's done all sorts of stuff. She's worked at London Zoo. She's trained Komodo dragons. She's trained crocodiles.
Which is sick, by the way.
Yeah, she's done all. She's done. She's worked at NGOs in like Vietnam and stuff like that. She's done all sorts of stuff, and she's absolutely amazing. She's currently doing her PhD, obviously to do with reptiles. Then we've got Emma, who's also about to embark on her PhD as well. So in terms of the level of knowledge that my staff have got, I am extremely lucky, like literally so lucky. But even the ones that I've had in the past and stuff, like they've been at a really decent level, like more so than others. But yeah,
it's one thing I've noticed as well with like the amount of time, because I've met previous people that have worked here.
Yeah,
but one thing that seems to be like the common denominator is that everyone seems passionate about working here. Like I don't think anyone's worked here just because they needed a job. So it's also having that kind of passion to learn, which is definitely a big thing, and it's prevalent in everyone.
And it's passion for the animals as well. Like we take animal welfare like extremely serious, like super, super serious, like definitely a lot more than what other stores do. And that's something that I'm coming to terms with from when we went to go see Liam, from Reptiles and Research, when we went to see him in Southampton, and we obviously did a tour and whatnot of places around there. I was like shocked at some of the states of the shops. Some were pretty good, like, you know, but others in terms of welfare and whatnot were just absolutely shocking. So, Yeah.
And I think a big part of it too is you're kind of alluding to that, Jake, and same with you, Ash. The passion is you don't need to hire somebody who already knows all of the information. You want to hire somebody who's willing to learn all the information and excited to learn, because you could probably spend a couple of weeks with them and bring them up to snuff as far as, you know, the animals that you have in the store and the protocols and whatnot. And you know, sitting behind you guys, for those who are just listening to the podcast, we have these beautiful enclosures behind both the guests today, and they have they're full of enrichment, and you know they look really nice, and I'm sure. Yeah. Like how much of that has to do with just the effect of the customer coming in? Like they see beautiful enclosures and animals out and acting natural. And it, you know, I can't smell the store from here, but sometimes you walk into a reptile shop and you're like, oh, I need to leave. You know?
Yeah.
You're like, I can't stay here for 3 minutes.
Yeah, you get hit in the face. I mean, in terms of like the actual like cleaning and stuff, like we're quite rigorous with it. We've got very strict cleaning schedules. We literally have one staff member whose job it is to go around and make sure everything is okay. Like we've all got like different roles and stuff, and like that's her like main role, is that she goes in, she makes sure all the tanks look nice and stuff like that. But in terms of customer, like we get a lot of customer feedback from when they go up to other places, and like they see the difference like in the animals in general, like the behavior, they just the condition that they're in as well. So you have to strike up a fine balance between it's observable for the customer, so they can actually see the animal, what they're purchasing. And also it's packed in there enough where they can exhibit the natural behaviors and as well feel nice, safe, and secure.
Yeah.
So you've got to mm-hmm. strike up that nice, happy balance between the two. Because if you go one way or the other, then you're kind of lost. You know, if you yeah. don't pack it and you don't allow the animals to exhibit natural behavior, then the animals are going to look, in a sense, because if we're going to be quite cruel about it, you've got to look at them as a product. The product doesn't yeah. look as good. It doesn't look as shiny as something.
Yeah.
Why did I say shiny like that?
I don't know why you said it like that.
It's like Donald Trump, like shiny.
I know exactly.
Shiner.
Shiny.
It's the best reptiles in the world. But yeah, anyway, get back onto it. So yeah, so it's about striking up that balance between the two.
Yeah.
So. Well, and it shows the customers and the people coming in what to expect when they set this up at their home, right?
Yeah,
this is kind of an example setup. It's not removing their what their pet keeping experience should be to the point where they actually don't know what they're buying, right? You actually want them to know that. Look at all the lights that are at the top of this thing. Look at the branches and the plants and all yeah. Any customer walking in will see that as money, which is not a bad thing. You want them to know that there's going to be an expense here, and this is what you're striving for.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, we kind of like give it as like a base to jump from. So we always tell our customers like, okay, this is what we like, the minimum we expect. Now it's your job to take that further.
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. this isn't like, realistically, how we keep the animals here isn't how I personally would keep. I would keep them at a lot higher standard, but obviously, like we said, we've got to work the fine line between the two. Yeah. But it's about helping customers out as well, you know? Like, we have quite a lot of people come in, like, want to do different ideas. Like, oh, how can I, like, enrich the animal's enclosure? Or how can I do this? Or I'm thinking about doing this training regime. Like, what do you think? And we're like, yeah, perfect. Like, we've got quite a few customers that have, like, gone away with the information. And they've created, like, elaborate, like, and this is quite a lot as well. It's a high volume. It's not just a niche, like, section of our customers. Like, our customers really do care. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. I was going to ask, what type, is there a typical customer that you have coming into the shop, or is you kind of have a mix of everything from beginner to expert and everything in between?
So we typically cater for more, pet keepers. That's literally mm-hmm. who we cater for. And I think this is where a lot of the time, a lot of shops fall down.
Yeah.
So they'll get these like really extravagant, expensive animals in and whatnot, and they won't sell. And they won't sell for ages, which is eating up your profits, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas realistically, if you have the majority of your stock bread and butter, then so things like beardies, royal pythons, et cetera, et cetera, or things that are very similar but a little bit different, then I think you'll fly. But yeah, we cater for more like pet keepers. We don't really deal with hobbyists, because hobbyists will go and do hobbyist things. Like, they're not really interested in pet shops. It might be the initial thing, like where they spark their interest from, and they may get like live food or frozen food, something like that from us. But everything else, like, they already know it, arguably. So there's not really a point in popping in.
Yeah.
Apart from tarantula people, we have quite a lot of tarantula like hobbyists and stuff come in. So yeah.
Well, and it's such a good point, because I think that it's one of the things that I think is skewed by social media and YouTube, is that because most people who are consuming reptile content on social media and YouTube are in that hobbyist category. And so we think we're bigger than we are, right? We think we're like a large group of people, but really it's the pet keepers who are new to keeping. They might just keep one reptile. Like, that is the lion's share of people who keep reptiles.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the amount of people who keep reptiles, millions of them don't interact with us. Now, I hope that they eventually do, that we can bring them into our fold and help them, you know, learn how to keep better care of their animals. But a whole bunch of people who are getting into reptiles are just keeping the one reptile. They're not going to go listen to a podcast or watch a video.
Yeah.
So if we can start that experience for them off properly, if they never interact with us on internet ever again, then we can at least know that animal is well cared for.
Yeah. And like, do you know what? I think going through the years, I feel that like definitely the past 2 or 3 years, but I would stretch that to probably say the past 5, I have noticed a shift in people's attitudes and perspectives towards reptiles. Something that I try and culture, but these fresh people that are coming in, I've had no interactions with them whatsoever. And their perspective is, let's do better. And people start as virtue signaling, like elitism, like whatever, but it's really not. And that's the way it's going. Like this Christmas, I have sold more bearded dragons in 5 and 6 foots. I've sold more royal and ball pythons in 6, 7, and 8 foots than I ever have. Like in like just this Christmas. Like it's crazy. Absolutely crazy. And most of the time it's when people have wanted to upgrade as well, which I think is quite positive.
Yeah.
We get a lot of people wanting to go, right, so this is the basics that I've got. What can I do? I've heard about adding LED in there. What kind of LED can I add in there for reptile vision? What other stuff can I put in there? So obviously things like hides and cork and branches and rocks and stuff like that. Yeah. So that's been quite positive and like makes me feel better as well about moving forward. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. And so I'm curious about, this is kind of a discussion that you and I, Ash, had on a keeper chat, and it was more so around the beginner species model. And so you'd already listed, and even Jake, you said you had a corn snake, but you know the ball python was almost a beginner species for you because it was one of the first ones you kept. And I always wonder, like, should we, how do you make sure that when someone's buying a species like that they are going home with a large enclosure with the proper lighting, because that is adding so much expense? I guess my question is, are customers willing to bear that burden? You kind of already answered that, but two, should we maybe be selling animals that are smaller, have shorter lifespans, maybe require less space for the beginner, so that initial price tag doesn't scare them, but we can still provide the animal with everything they need? Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Do you want to tackle this one and then I can? Do you want to give it a go?
Well,
as a novice, your perspective on it?
So I think as a novice, like the whole beginner animal kind of, I feel like maybe bearded dragons might not be a beginner friendly. I don't know.
It's an opinion, like, you know?
Maybe not. Maybe like a crestie or a leopard gecko, just something smaller, something kind of a bit easier to manage, is probably more beginner friendly. As well with snakes, I feel like corn snakes and royal pythons, really, they are quite easy. I feel like they're quite easy. I don't know what your opinion is. I'm not used to having opinions on this show. But no, it is a good question as well with the, dictating, well, not really dictating, it's a bit of a strong word, but whether or not someone is kind of able to take home an animal that might be a bit too intermediate for them.
Mm.
I don't really know how you would I don't really want to say police it, but.
Well, you would have to, kind of.
I don't really know.
You definitely have to kind of like police it, but
I think the thing that you do, because you like to, not that you like to, but you probably do like to.
Where's this going?
Yeah, when someone comes into like buy an animal and they haven't got a setup, you want proof of setup, don't you?
Oh, 100%.
You always ask for proof of setup to see what they've actually got.
Yeah.
What the size of the vivid?
Like literally 2 days ago. Sorry to interrupt you. Two days ago, there was a gentleman that came in and he wanted to put a bearded dragon in a 60-liter biorb. You know, like the fish tanks that are like rounded like that.
Yes.
Yeah, he wanted to put a bearded dragon in one of those, and obviously I said yes. No, I'm joking.
yeah, that's totally fine. Yeah.
No, and I was like, well, no, not really. Like. And then I went through, obviously, UVB lighting, went through the need for thermal gradients, et cetera, et cetera. And it was like, so what you're saying is you're not going to sell me it until I get something like this. And I went, no, sorry. And then, what did he throw at me? I think he threw one of the, you know, little hand sprayers off the shelf. He just kind of went bang like that. And I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. He actually threw something at you.
Oh yeah, it happened. Like, not so much now, but like when we first opened and stuff. Because like when at the time when we first opened, there was a lot of like cowboys that would like bend over backwards for like bargain billies, and yeah, and I don't do that. Like, at the end of the day, these animals have not asked to be put in this situation. So, therefore, it's up to us to, like, make sure and caretake for them as well. So, but yeah. But anyway, getting back to the point of beginner species. So, typically the ones we've got that we recommend for beginner species are obviously bearded dragon, corn snake, royal python, ball python, cresties and leos, correct? Yeah, I've already said those.
I don't know.
I mean, I think it's a difficult thing to ask. So obviously, you said about like costings and stuff like that. Do people have this in mind when they go and buy a dog? Realistically,
not really. They only really think about the price of the dog.
Exactly. Like you buy a pug, a genetically broken brachiocephalic piece of crap, right?
Yes.
Like.
I mean,
you go and buy these things, right?
Yeah.
You're looking at what in the UK? How much are they? About two grand? There are about
ridiculous.
2 grand?
Yeah.
Like, so I don't understand the argument of beginner species in that sense, terms of monetary value. So are bearded dragons easy to look after? Yeah, of course they are. They're like super hardy, extremely forgiving if you do mess up on the odd occasion, you know? But do they require a large space? Yes, of course they do. Like, yeah. They need a large space. So are you quantifying a beginner species due to the large space, or are you quantifying the beginner species down to its actual care requirements, as its actual care? So the day-to-day running of feeding it salad, insects, et cetera, et cetera. Because I think, like, they're two separate things. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally, yeah.
I think in my head, the reason it was... not a beginner friendly is because it's the daily, you've got to keep an eye on this. Like, it's not like a snake where you feed it once and then you leave it for like a week. Like, I think a lot of people don't expect it to be every single day and don't check on it every single day. And I think it's also the, because I had this situation a few days ago, and I can't remember, I think you'll probably know the size of the viv that it was.
Oh, yeah, the 3 foot by 15 by 18.
That size, there was a viv that I had that I was trying to sell. And I had someone asking to buy it from me, and I had to ask them first, like, just so I can know, what are you planning to put in it? And they wanted to put an adult bearded dragon in it.
Yeah.
And I, probably a little bit cheeky, well, no, not cheeky, I said no to them. And then, which was probably a bit cheeky, I sent them a link to our care guide. kind of like a, just so you know, this is what you should really be putting in it. Like, you shouldn't, this is what you should be putting it in. Like, it's not.
Yes.
It's far too small for a bearded dragon.
Mm. Yeah. But should we exploit, I'm not going to use the word exploit, should we go for, like you said, Dylan, potentially like maybe smaller species and stuff? Yeah, I think it needs looking at. I think the whole thing, it needs to be a holistic approach to it all. Yeah. I don't think just doing one thing, right, okay, bearded dragons are now no longer suitable for people to take care of, da-da-da-da, that's it, let's go for something smaller. Like, no, not really. You know?
Well, I think there's an aspect of people wanting to interact with their animal, like physically, like with the bearded dragon, you could target train, you can let them out, let them run around and do all that sort of stuff, where you're not going to do that with like a micro gecko. Yeah, you might be able to give a micro gecko a beautiful enclosure for a tenth of the price. That's more space than it will ever need. But if you open the door, now it's a wild micro gecko for 3.5 days before it gets eaten by a bird, you know, those type of things. So you have to kind of look at both sides and what that pet keeper actually is wanting to get from that animal.
Very true.
I think it is a good one.
It needs to be a holistic approach. I don't think there's any one correct answer.
No.
Because you could say, oh no, of course, bearded dragons are perfect for beginners. But then you've got some, like, we don't sell our bearded dragons out really in anything less than a 4B2, which is like the bare minimum standards required, even the babies. Like, they grow too quickly. Mm-hmm. Like, and yeah, there are loads of reasons why we don't sell them out in anything smaller, thermal gradients, et cetera, et cetera. But some places do. So in that sense, are they really suitable? It depends on the seller, I think.
Well, I think that's the point, is that, yeah, it really does depend on the seller. And I think that if a shop, I could see why a shop would say, I'm going to reduce my standards to make sales because I'm trying to make sure my business doesn't go under. And I'm not saying that's a good thing, but I'm just saying it's very easy, a logical step for somebody to make. So how do you get comfortable as a shop owner to say, no, I'm not going to reduce my standards, but which in some ways actually risks the shop going under, for example? Maybe that's never been a risk, but you know, at the surface of it, that is a risk, that making less sales could lead to that. So how do you, you know what I mean? Like, if someone comes in, they're expecting to spend $80 on a bearded dragon, and then you're saying, no, it's going to be like $500, and they walk out the door.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, because you've trained your customer base so well, does that not become a problem because you're able to warm customers up to making the extra purchase?
I think, to be quite fair, I think it is what it is. If you don't want to buy from us, you don't have to buy from us. As cold as that is, like, that's it. Like, you have the option to do right by the animal or you don't. Like, it's it is completely up to you. Like, that's it. I think where people fall down is when they do start laxing on their standards. You're not just doing yourself a disservice. You're doing the whole reptile community a disservice, because then you say you sell someone a beardy in like a 3 foot da 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 da. That person then starts chatting bear on the internet, and then, oh no, bearded dragons are fine in 3 foot. And then we go back to the whole thing again. And it's like a disease. Like, it just spirals out of control.
It just goes in a big circle.
Yeah, 100%. And I think people need to realize that. I think hobbyists need to stop gatekeeping stuff. People want to do right by their animals now. Like, yes. I've seen a wave of, like I spoke about earlier, I've seen a wave of people that want to do right. They want to care for these animals as best as they can, you know? And for the most, well, we don't really have any problems, like, at all. Like, 9 times out of 10, people buy stuff from us. And that 10%, well, like 1%, I'm not bothered. I'm really not bothered about them. If they want to go spend the money somewhere else, the animal becomes sick because it's not well. It's not being kept for properly through various different things. And then they eventually come back to us anyway. And they're like, well, I wish I'd had started off from the start. Well, there you go.
Exactly. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah,
I think that's one of the things as well when it comes to like the expectation of like how much to spend on this animal.
It's gross.
It's a weird concept, because go back to like buying a dog. If you're already expecting to spend X amount of money on this dog, why would you not also expect to spend probably the same amount to look after the dog? Like, I don't understand that kind of side of logic. And I think the whole, you know, someone comes in and wants to spend £80, and actually you should probably be spending close to however much.
About 500 quid.
Yeah, exactly, like, about 500. And they're turned down by that. I think at the end of the day, it's kind of giving them that realistic expectation of, this is how much you should be spending. If you can't afford it, you shouldn't buy it. Like, it's not. For anything that you'd buy, whether it's an animal or not, and like just anything, you always put the pros and cons. Like, am I going to spend this much amount of money on this thing that I would like, or am I not? Like,
yeah,
like, you're not.
I think it's people's attitudes in general towards it. I find the whole discussion around it quite gross, and I find it quite embarrassing as well. Of why is it that our community feel the need to make everything as cheap as possible? Yeah. Like, as cheap. No. Like, why? I don't get it. You don't really see that in the dark frog community. You don't see it in the marine community, really, you know? Like, those are specialized hobbies for specialized, well, specialized people, you know? Yeah.
Because I think at the same time, it's kind of putting that value on the life of the animal.
Yeah.
Which is something I could argue that's a bit scenty, but I don't really care.
The thing is, if someone wants an animal, they're going to get an animal regardless. Yeah. Regardless if that bearded dragon is 50 quid or 500, people are going to get it. Like, if they really, really want it, they will pay for that.
Yeah.
So I think if you set the price standards a little bit higher, then one, the person that's either breeding or selling them is going to make more money. And two, the animal itself, you probably know, is going to go to a better home.
Yeah.
Because they are willing to fork out that extra.
Yeah, and they're not just going to buy it because they can buy it. They're going to buy it because they want to buy it. Like, it's not just a...
I'm not into, obviously, pricing people out of, like, keeping and stuff. There comes a line. People don't get dogs because, oh, I can't keep a dog, it's too expensive, I don't have the time, etc., etc. So why aren't people the exact same with keeping reptiles? It's something that, like, boggles my mind.
Yeah.
Well, in many ways, it's probably a caricature that those of us who don't deal with customers on a daily basis sort of invent. Like, we just envision this person coming in with $8 in their pocket being like, I want to keep reptiles. Where in reality, that's probably not the type of person that you have in your store most of the time. Yeah. And as we were saying off air, I think there is a value in creating a customer that's caring for their animal at a high welfare standard, because then you create a reoccurring customer, whether that's for their, you know, the refreshment of their UV bulbs or just the food or, you know, any decor or lighting or just another animal in general, a larger enclosure. So as a, you know, getting into the business side of it, there is a high value in making sure a customer has a healthy, happy, quote, animal. You know, that's a high value for your shop. And I think if somebody is listening to this who is a shop owner and feels like, man, I've let my standards slide because I'm so afraid not to make sales, do you think that is like the best piece of advice for them, just to bump up to your welfare standards and that you're going to sacrifice some bad sales, but you're hopefully going to eventually generate good sales that will be reoccurring customers? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, when we first opened, there were other specialist reptile shops in the area, and they were not, they were fucking dog shit. Like they were, like, I'm sorry. Well, I'm not sorry. They were so outdated, even for the time that they were open. And it just perpetuated that cheap, cheap, cheap thing. And keeping reptiles isn't cheap. And we need to wake up to that. We need to wake up to keeping reptiles is not a cheap thing to do. Like, the initial acquisition of the animal, like, everything. Like, it's not. And, well, let's say we're here 8 years later, and where are they? Nowhere to be seen. So I know that probably sounds quite bullish and big-headed, but at the end of the day, people, your customers, care. Like, they really do care about these animals. Like, if they see an animal that, like, is in distress, like, they may buy it out of pity, but they won't be a returning customer. Like, and then they'll come to specialist places where it's done properly, you know? So, and I think people's lack of education on it as well, like, and shop assistants and stuff, like, and that's quite sad. We get it quite a lot from, like, other places and stuff where the animals haven't been trapped properly because of the stuff that the store has given them. Yeah. And these are as well, arguably special. They call themselves specialists, but are they? Probably not. So,
yeah.
I'll get a bit feisty. I think that's wow.
No, but it's really good advice. I mean, at the end of the day, a cheap sale is a cheap sale, and it's going to be a cheap sale for you. It's like that, and they are now a cheap valued customer, and they may never come back because they got their one thing they want. And I think all of that package of information we just, you know, that conversation is really important for anybody who runs a shop or works in a shop, but also people who breed reptiles and work with sales. And, you know, it's the same philosophy that should be kind of across that. So there are many people who listen to this right now who have a small batch breeding project and they want to make sure their animals go to good homes. And I think all of that applies to people who are working in this hobby in general. And I think Ash, you said it perfectly, that if we send somebody off with the wrong information, it's kind of a disease and it spreads. And so the best thing you can do is have the highest standards when you are the point of sale. That's just how it is. Hey there, I'd like to take a quick break from the episode to thank this week's sponsors. We have Exotics Keeper Magazine, which is a herpetoculture-based magazine out of the UK. If you live in the UK, you can have the physical magazine delivered to your house on a monthly basis for only a couple of pounds a month. If you happen to live somewhere else in the world, you can sign up for the digital copy of the magazine, which is completely free at this time, which is an incredible opportunity to really sink your teeth into some amazing articles. It is a very well-rounded magazine, including articles on advancing reptile care or just exotic animal care in general, conservation efforts, zoo news, and probably my favorite articles are the ones that are written by people who keep particular species, so you have features on particular species, including their care guide, how to breed them, you know, the nuances of caring for each species. So if you are looking for more information, head to exoticskeeper.com. Again, the digital copy is free, so there's absolutely no reason not to sign up for it. I would also like to take the opportunity to thank Custom Reptile Habitats for sponsoring the show. There is an affiliate link in both the YouTube description and the show notes. If you use that link and purchase something, a commission comes back to me at no extra cost to you, which of course helps support your own animal with a high quality enclosure and helps support the podcast and keep the lights on in this room. Let's jump back to the episode.
Yeah. And don't have the attitude of, oh, completed it, mate. Like, don't have that attitude, because like, there is always things that you can learn. Like, I hate it when like people go like, oh, you're an expert. And they've probably spoken to you about it before. I hate the term. I really do. I think it, what that term, it just glass ceilings you like all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just a bloke that likes to drink coffee and know stuff about reptiles. Like, you know, like,
that's I know me. What reptiles eat.
You know, like, I don't like the term at all.
Yeah.
It grosses me out.
Yeah.
Should we segue into the YouTube channel? Because I think that's kind of a perfect, you know, a lot of great information about running a shop and the ethics of selling. And I think this kind of dovetails nicely into this next project. So first, I'm curious, Jake, how did you get roped into this? Is this do you feel like you've regret your life already? You went from a novice reptile keeper, now you're a reptile YouTuber.
So I think, because you've spoken to me about it, and I think the way I got roped into it is because I was sick of my job. They won't see this, it's fine.
You never know who listens to the show.
I wanted to get into YouTube, just doing like gaming videos and stuff like that. So I was practicing with editing and stuff like that, and showed you and all of our friends just to kind of like get a little bit of feedback and stuff. And then you just kind of turn around to me one day, it's like, oh, by the way, I want to make a YouTube channel. Do you want to do it with me? Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's how it went.
That's how it went.
It's where I got roped into it, and I'm glad I did get roped into it, because it's, I don't know, it's just, it's quite exciting, and it's being a part of kind of sharing that knowledge. I mean, obviously I'm gaining the knowledge first, but being able to kind of share the knowledge and kind of set kind of like a better standard, really, for like reptile care.
Well, I'm glad you got roped into it as well. We always need more reptile channels. Even though it seems like there's lots, there's never enough really good ones. And so I think it's a perfect dynamic. As I said at the beginning of the show, with Jake, you being a little more a novice and Ash being more experienced, or an expert, as I might call you. it's a perfect dynamic between the two, because you guys are kind of have this banter. And so Ash, why don't you just quickly tell us, how did you come to the idea? What motivated you actually pull the trigger on this?
Well, obviously, I've known you for 2 years, and obviously the odd occasion when we've spoken, you've suggested the idea. Also, Liam has suggested the idea on multiple occasions. But I think the straw that broke the camel's back for me was when something happened to do with my shop. And it was targeted by another business. And I was sick of it. I was sick of seeing everything. I was sick of seeing the poor care that was coming out, and I wanted to make a difference, and I wanted to educate, because ever since leaving the college that I think that's been something that's lacking. Like, I enjoyed educating people like on like exotic animals, mainly reptiles, but like exotic animals in general. Like, I think it's quite important. And I just really missed it. So I was like, after a heated discussion with Liam, I was on the phone, I was like spitting feathers. I was like, I'm sick of this. I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to absolutely do it. I'm sick of it. And I think Liam was just at the other end kind of like, okay.
Jay, can you edit videos for me, please?
Yeah, I was like, I'm going to get onto this right now. I'm sick of it. So, yeah. And as well, like, I tried to, like, come across as it being, like, a bit relaxed. Like, the information's still there, but a little bit funny. Like, some people may find it funny, some people don't. But, you know, adding that in there, adding that extra, like, dynamic, you know, because that every single other reptile channel that I know of, they're not funny. Like, it's quite dry content. It's like it's like chewing into like a bourbon, and you ain't got anything to dip it into. Do you know what I mean?
I don't even know what you just said.
You know, like a biscuit, like a dry biscuit. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Like a cookie.
Yeah. There we
go. Yeah.
Well, no, their cookies are different over there, aren't they?
I think so.
Are they? I don't know. Anyway.
But I know what you mean. A dry biscuit. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Just add a little bit of.
A digestive.
Yeah. A bit more.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. McVitie's digestive. Other ones are available.
Yeah. And I think it's just kind of like a nice kind of gateway to just the whole thing as a whole, really. Just.
Yeah.
Kind of like a nice. It's a nice, relaxed, chilled out kind of experience of how to care for your animals.
Yeah.
And
it is the basic bare bones, isn't it?
Yeah, because like, I think for me at the end of the day, but even at the end of the day, at this point in time, even if it's just as a stepping stone and some like that they end up going somewhere else afterwards, as long as we've created that stepping stone for them to go more in depth before we end up doing the more in-depth videos, I'm fine with that.
Yeah. And as well, there's like, I think there's too much American content, and that might be quite controversial, but I think what I mean by that is the American content isn't necessarily bad. It's just different to how people in Europe take care of animals.
Yeah.
Like, you've got a YouTuber in Florida, and they're like, oh yeah, I just keep my chameleons, like, oh, this isn't a Floridian accent at all, but like, you know, I just keep my chameleons like outside, and like, it's fine, I just keep them at this, and it's fine, and da da da. It's like, well, that's fine for you, because you've got the climate to do so.
You can't do that. No, you cannot.
He is a little bit cooler.
Yeah, it's always raining, and it's always windy.
Yeah.
It's just cold, and it's horrible.
Yeah. Aww.
Well,
I like it.
There's sun a couple of days a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple of days. Yeah. A couple of days.
Yeah.
A year.
Yeah.
Not the beach.
No, I think it's, I mean, I think if people, I mean, just listening to this episode, they know that you guys have a good chemistry and a funny chemistry. And so the videos are funny and the editing is funny. So Jake, good job on that. There's just in general, I think it has a, it bring in like a slightly different vibe to the reptile videos. And you're so right, Ash. A lot of reptile videos are either just kind of off the wall crazy or just straight content like this podcast, just straight content. You know, there'll be funny things throughout the episode, but it's not lighthearted as your videos are. And that is the type of video we want new people to find because it immediately pulls them in. And so maybe you guys could just list off a few of the videos you've done. Obviously you've mentioned some care guides. You could kind of list off that. And then I would love to know, future wise, are you starting to kind of think about what you might want to do?
So at the minute we've completed,
well, we've got corn snake care guide.
Yeah, corn.
Cresty and leopard gecko care guide.
That leopard gecko one's doing really well.
It is doing really well. Like, I'm quite happy with that. I think that was the first one.
Yeah,
well,
one of the first ones, yeah. The CTR right on its side. You're like, oh!
Bearded dragon care guide. And the one that's in production now, which is hopefully either, if I'm saying realistically, probably tomorrow.
Yeah.
Will be the Amazon
Milk Frog.
Amazon Milk Frog.
Which we had help from Ellie Hills.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Awesome. So by the time people hear that, hear this, that will be out.
Yes. So that'll be out on the 23rd. But we've also, yeah. So Ellie helped us with the Amazon Muck Frog one. She helped us with the White's True Frog one that's also getting cooked in the oven at the minute. Yes. And the Pac-Man one. Yeah. So I love the Pac-Man. Have I sent you the little thing from the Pac-Man?
Yes. Yeah. Ash made a pretty funny meme. I hope did you post that on the channel yet? Is that a short somewhere?
No, not oh. yet. Not yet. I didn't make okay. it. It was Jake. It was Jake that made
oh,
it.
Oh, Jake made it.
Yeah. Honestly,
I hope it makes its it sees the light of day because it's funny.
I do feel like we should post that separately after the Pac-Man video comes out. I think we should have that posted separately as a short.
It's just so dumb.
Because it's dumb. Just. But I think that's kind of part of like with my editing as well because like. I am very new to it. There's one of the hardest things is, especially because we're trying to make it funny, it's deciding something's funny. That's the hardest thing because it's easy for me to see you do something and yeah, that's really funny.
Yeah.
But then
to an audience
yeah. who doesn't know us properly, and doesn't know the different little kind of like cues that we all have.
Yeah.
It's one thing that I found is watching something multiple times. Like if I can watch something that I originally thought was funny three times and still find it funny, it will stay in. Whereas if it's like I only found it funny the first time I watched it, it's probably not actually that funny to stay in.
Mm. Yes.
And it's that's one of the things that's kind of been kind of the most critical part.
That's a really keen eye to have too.
Yeah.
I mean, especially in the podcast world, you see, me and my buddies, we always talk about the most funny stuff. We're going to start a podcast. It's like, hey, actually, no one cares about you and your buddies and the conversations you guys have. Like, you guys think it's funny.
Yeah,
no one knows you. Exactly. Like, it's funny for you guys, and it sounds like a great time. But if you put that on audio, it's not going to be listened to. So it can be hard to decipher, like, what's a funny inside joke between the two of you or what's something that's going to, you know, resonate to the people watching. I'm curious, how valuable will those care videos be in the shop? I mean, that's got to be so much easier. Just say, hey, go home. Watch this. You can come back and ask questions.
Honestly.
What have we decided to do?
Oh, hold on.
Have we got
there's one here, look.
Yeah.
Oh, is there some QR codes out there?
Yes.
Or what?
Oh, you spot the surprise, Dylan.
Oh, nice.
Little QR codes. You can't see that because it's really tiny on there. But, you know, yeah.
Bring it up to the camera.
I don't know which one that was. Oh, it's probably not going to. Okay.
Yeah, it just looks like a big white card. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, scan
there
it. I dare you.
Which one is it?
Yeah.
Corn snake.
Oh, that's the corn. Well, that's a spoiler, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, they already know. We've already mentioned we've done a bloody corn snake one. You fool.
Yeah, but they didn't know which one it was.
It says it at the bottom, you mong.
Oh yeah.
But no.
Walk me through that. Somebody comes up, and then you can say, "Hey, boom, scan that."
Yeah.
Yeah. So like when it's like really like busy. Like especially like on weekends and stuff like that, we'll just be like, "Oh, are you guys all right? Are you waiting? Oh, yeah, we just want to know about corn snakes, da 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 da, or beta dragons." It's like, well, if you scan QR code while you're waiting, you can you can have a look at that.
Yeah.
So,
and it's unfortunate because the app that I use to make them, it doesn't show you how many people have scanned it, unfortunately.
Mm.
But I would love to see how many people have actually gone to the YouTube videos from the actual QR codes themselves.
Mm.
And I think we've definitely seen a spike since you've added them, I feel.
Yeah.
And it's,
and changed the thumbnails.
Yeah, and done like proper like thumbnails and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's, but I think, especially, everyone's already on the phone. Everyone's on the phone.
Anyway. Yes.
Everyone's got the phone handy. And I think even if you didn't know what a QR code was, there's always that little kind of like, I wonder what this does. And you scan that. Oh, this is what it is. Yeah, that's helpful.
Yeah.
I think everyone's kind of like, you see a QR code randomly somewhere, you kind of want to scan it just because you can.
Yeah,
see where it goes.
Yeah.
And it works.
And it works. Yeah, we've definitely seen a spike since adding it.
We've got quite a few fans already, which is bizarre because we've been how long have we been doing it for? Like three weeks? Four weeks?
It's over a month.
Over a month, is it?
Yeah. I wouldn't be able to know unless I check the phone.
I think it's just over, isn't it? When we uploaded the first one.
I want to say it's between 4 to 6 weeks. Somewhere probably just under six.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly.
Yeah. So we've got a few fans already.
390, I want to say.
about 390 at the minute,
which is still insane to me. I'll admit, like, it's still
baby numbers.
Yeah,
but, like,
but it's.
Hey, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, it's still the fact that it's more than one is astounding to me.
Yeah, and it's not just the two of you sub exactly. to your channel. Yeah. Yeah, well, and you're getting good views on them too. I mean, I remember starting my YouTube channel, I had to like subtract the views that were likely just me from the total view count. I'm like, okay, 12 views, and probably 8 of those are me checking views. So 4 people have stumbled across this.
Yeah.
And so you guys are getting, you know, hundreds into there. So that in you know, on the early videos, which is great. And that's, you know, as a helping a customer, they watch the video, they can ask you guys the direct questions even about that care guide specifically. It's true, because that's the kind of the ramble that you would go on with a new customer anyway.
Yeah, it is.
So it just saves time. Yeah. I mean, it's just way more efficient.
It's all like the basic like questions and stuff like that, what people typically ask and stuff. So yeah, if there's anything like more like nuanced, then obviously they've got me in the shop to, and obviously the other staff members and whatnot, they can ask us. So
yeah, just in case it's not covered, or if it's something that we haven't covered yet.
Yeah, because the thing is, like, I find quite a lot of people are scared to ask on the Facebook groups because of how toxic they can be.
Yes.
Yeah, they probably feel like the question they're going to ask is the wrong question, and they don't want to.
Yeah.
Which, like, I understand that. I kind of get that.
Yeah.
Like, it's like kind of, I kind of have like anxiety in some aspects as well.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of get that, not wanting to ask something that could be labeled as like stupid.
Well, I would like say, like, there's wrong. No such thing as like a stupid question.
No,
unless
no.
You're asking like what's going to win out of a bearded dragon and a leopard gecko.
Yeah,
that's a stupid question.
It's obviously a leopard gecko.
But like, it's obviously a leopard gecko. John Cena!
Yeah. Yeah, those little arms have a lot of power.
Yeah.
Hench, Macho Man Randy Savage.
Yeah.
No, yeah, definitely.
And being in the shop too, it gives you a little bit more content at your disposal as far as the animals, and it doesn't come off as the pet tuber thing that, you know, you're not promoting an overwhelming amount of animals in a private collection. And I always put the caveat in. I know I have tons of friends who have huge collections and do amazing jobs with them. Just in general, that's not the norm. And you will, because it's in a shop setting, you're not setting the precedent that every enclosure behind you is your personal animal that now you care for. It's a shop setting. So you have different species that are coming, you know, come and go, which is really cool. But beyond the care guides, are there ideas that you have that you're comfortable sharing or that you're willing to share?
I think for the most part, I think we're going to be focusing on, for the next couple of months anyway, I think we're probably going to be focusing on like the big five and stuff like that to get us to a point with the channel where like we can start getting monetized.
Yeah.
We can start then like building like a good community base and stuff like that. And then there are other ideas in the pipeline, which are like more like passion projects type situation.
Yeah, kind of less
collabs with different YouTubers and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so
kind of less the educational route, more kind of like the silly route a little bit. Just casual kind of content.
Yeah.
Because obviously when you say the top five, the fifth one, well, corn snakes, royal pythons, Cresties, leopards, and bearded. Obviously, we haven't got the royal python video out yet.
No.
We had a little bit of a roadblock on that.
We did.
The audio cuts out like halfway through, so we need to re-record it. But yeah, because they're like the top five that we talk about. Obviously, we've already started branching beyond the top, top five, because we're doing the frogs and
stuff like that. So.
Yeah,
but I think.
Yeah, I want to get to a point where everything in the shop has got a care guide.
Everything's been covered,
so we can. Well, one, it's easy for me as well. Yeah. Well, I'm just like, yeah, look at that. Like, it's fine.
Yeah, because obviously, like, looking around, there's like, I'd say there's probably about 5 to 10% of the vivs have got QR codes on them, because like the ones that have bearded dragons in it and stuff like that. There's still quite a lot of vivs that don't have the QR codes on them, because they're like Chinese beauty snake and what's that one? I can't see that one from here.
Which one?
The one in the middle there.
Which one?
That one.
New Caledonian mossy gecko.
The new Caledonian thing.
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
Yeah, like the gargoyle gecko, which is sick. But yeah, I think it's that's definitely something that we'd like to do. Well,
I think they're more like niche ones.
I think that's also something that's kind of to kind of look at which order to do it in as well.
Yeah.
That's something to how niche are we gonna go? Hi,
super niche.
Yeah, but it
what about
kind of in a way.
What about like shop operational stuff? I mean, we had a really good conversation about, you know, the ethics of operating a shop. And I think this was maybe off air. We were talking about, Ash, you were saying that a lot of the animals, like the Cresties and whatnot, you breed in shop.
Yeah.
Are you guys going to expose that for us to see how you're successfully breeding these animals and selling them in a way that you're not losing money? And I haven't seen the breeding room, but I know that it's not, it's just tubs, right? Just rats.
Oh, everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. As soon as you go back there, it's just
about this big.
Yeah, tiny little things like that.
Yeah.
No, obviously, you know my ethos on racks. We don't breed in racking systems. I think they're absolutely fucking barbaric.
But having said that, the back room must not be racks. So, I think there's always that myth of, oh, if we don't breed in racks, if I don't cut the expense down to this very thin margin, we're going to lose money. But you are successfully breeding in an enriching way and then selling, you don't have to go out and source those animals because you're selling, you are producing them yourself and selling them to your customer base in a way that's not losing money.
Yeah.
So I think that would be an awesome, a series of videos to do to show people that it's actually possible.
Yeah. I mean, obviously when it gets to like the breeding season, it's something that we've spoken about, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's on the list.
It is on the list.
It's on the list. So yeah, I think, cause obviously we've got like the big, like, the tall incubators and stuff like that. So I mean, because like in breeding season, like both of those, because the basic, like the really massive like drinks fridges.
Yeah.
Like I converted those into incubators, like, we've got like a couple of those, and like every single like breeding season, like they are absolutely jam packed to the rafters. So I think this year. Judging by how many royal pythons that we've got in as rescue, I think for the second year on the trot, we're not going to breed royals. I think we're more than likely going to breed consnecks again because we're running quite low on those. Beard is definitely, leopard geckos 100%. But there are a few things, new species that we've recently acquired that hopefully we can breed next year. And hopefully the Woma pythons will breed this year as well. So, yes. So, yeah. But yeah, stuff like that is something that we're definitely going to be doing moving forward.
Cool.
So I think tour as well. I think we're probably going to do like an actual shop tour.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
people can
cool.
So people can have a look and they can see that it's not all a myth.
it's not just this.
Yeah. It's not green screen.
Is that a cardboard photo behind you? Yeah.
It's actually real.
Yeah.
And as obviously Liam's been and seen it, so he knows it's real.
I know we'd like to do like set up.
Yeah.
Stuff as well.
Yeah.
Kind of like, but I think.
Like how to's
and
stuff
like
that.
Kind of like
that.
How to actually accomplish these like enclosures and stuff.
Yeah.
I personally feel like having. Well, I say I don't know really, because I think having a decent amount of care guides first and then moving over to the setup videos might be good.
Yeah. I think just to get that initial audience and obviously get you out of the job that you hate and stuff like that, because but I'm finding it quite fun, to be quite fair. I've only had a few like weirdos and stuff, but like that's about it.
That's how it goes. No, that's awesome. And like I said, there's always room for new, better channels, people that are focused on the right mindset. And I think coming from a shop perspective, it's so key that like we already kind of alluded to, there's shortcuts that quite often shop people owners make or people who are selling animals make. And I don't think they're doing it because they don't like the animal. They're doing it because they actually think that if they don't do that, their business might fail. And so it's kind of a scary position, right? They're kind of willing to pull back their own ethics just to make sure that they don't go under.
Yeah.
But I think having a channel that shows, you know, actually you can have a strong set of ethics and we can actually be a positive force in this hobby and not go under is a really key thing. And, you know, the business has been around for 8 years or so, and that's kind of beyond the, you know, most businesses close in their first 2 years or whatever it is. So you're kind of through the hard part, and now you just get to continue to build on this. And I think it's really important.
Yeah. I mean, we've got quite a lot of stuff like lined up for content wise as well, but it's a good point. I think maybe more shop content we should probably do, maybe.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah.
Thanks
for the tip, cool. Dylan.
yeah. I'll get the commission on that. Okay. We can talk about that off air. Is there anything else you guys want to mention about the channel or just anything in general? Because I think we've covered a lot of great stuff today. And especially, like I said, for people that are breeding or selling, I think this is some really great information, and you'll already have people excited to go check out your channel if they haven't already. But is there anything that we've missed?
I don't think so. I mean, I think apart from obviously the information that's in there should be taken seriously, but everything else, it's just a laugh.
It's just a casual kind of thing. Yeah. And I think that it's obviously...
She's casual.
Yeah, and I think it's as basic as the care guides are, as we kind of progress, they'll get re-uploaded and there'll be more in-depth.
In-depth ones.
Yeah, there'll be more in-depth ones, and then if more information comes out and we learn something else and...
Like Bearded Dragons, I don't know, blue wallpaper.
Yeah, and then there'll be a new care guide.
Re-upload.
Yeah, and we'll just kind of go from there, really.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, well, I'm very much looking forward to it progress over the year. Like, you guys are already off to a fantastic start, hitting that 300 sub mark in a pretty short period of time. By the time people hear this, you'll be beyond that for sure. I don't even know if we mentioned the name of the channel. So please mention the name of the shop where they can find information about the shop, but also the channel, because that's a really important part.
So it's called Exotic to the World TV. And I'm sure Dylan is going to be absolutely lovely and put it in a link in the description.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes, please.
Because we now use this YouTube lingo, because we are YouTubers now.
We are YouTubers.
We do this. It's a job.
Yeah.
There we go. But yeah, and obviously the shop's called Exotics of the World in Cleethorpes. 241 Grimsby Road, DN35-7HE. So there we go.
And the channel is on the internet.
And the channel's on the internet.
Okay, so www.google will get you there.
Yeah.
If anyone's in the UK, they can check out your shop. Like, everything's a short drive in the UK, so just go check it out. And is there an Instagram? You guys have Instagram for the shop, right? And Facebook?
Yes. Facebook. And I think I don't really upload to Instagram anymore, to be fair, because it's severed the link for some reason, and I've lost the password. But as soon as I get that redone, it'll be on there.
Okay, awesome. Yeah,
that's one thing we're looking to do for the channel itself as well. Try and get them
on, yeah,
like TikTok and all that kind of stuff as well. Like, mainly the shorts.
Yeah, you'll definitely want to do
the
that.
Shorts.
Yeah.
It's just getting them.
Our bloody eight shorts.
Yeah, it's...
I ate them.
It's what we get most views
on. I know.
And in it, yeah. Like, do you know what? I put up a daft video, right, of the snake, right, with some just teeny boppy music, right? It gets like
3K.
It gets 3K views, right? And then I do this like really nice elaborate one about the sugar gliders and stuff like that. It's got 100. I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Welcome to YouTube.
Welcome to the internet.
Yeah. Things will go that you're like, why? And that's just the way it is. So just keep doing what you guys are doing. It's been an awesome channel so far. It's been fun to watch. And thank you both for coming on the podcast. And thank you for coming on again as well, Ash. And for you, Jake, welcome to the herpetoculture community. Thank you for stepping into that and also being on the show. And we will do it again. We'll have to follow up with you guys at some point in the future.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you very much, my darling.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
All right, that is the end of that episode. Ash and Jake, thank you so much for jumping on the podcast. It was a blast chatting with you guys. As anyone that listened to that episode or watched on YouTube or Spotify knows, or would have picked up how hilarious you guys are and how funny it is. And And I hope that anyone listening to this will end up going out to the YouTube channel, because that's the, even more so than they were displaying today on the episode. They are even funnier and more lighthearted throughout their videos. And they make their, even though the content is really important and really good, solid information, it's being delivered in a way that's entertaining and funny, which I think you cannot have enough of in our hobby. Because like we said, there's a lot of kind of like dry, kind of just straight up content, including my podcast. You know, the podcast, a lot of the ways it's just... it is what it is. We're talking about important and sometimes intense subjects. So it's nice to have that lighthearted kind of comedy side to you know, bring into the fold. Listeners, if you enjoyed the podcast and you want to help out, you can share it on social media, Instagram or Facebook. Definitely go check out our affiliate sponsor, CustomReptileHabitats.com. You can find an affiliate link in both the YouTube description or the show notes. If you do make a purchase using that link, a commission comes back to me at no extra cost to you, and that helps me support the show. You can also check out Patreon at patreon.com/animalsathome. There are a few perks there to help support the podcast financially that way, and you also get early access to the episodes and instant access to the Discord server, and you just get the meet other people who are like-minded in the reptile world, which I think is always nice. Okay, that is it for this episode. I will see everyone in the next one.